Hello and welcome back to FinTech Stories, Taylor Wissing's podcast series, which explores the latest legal and regulatory developments, trends, and hot topics in the FinTech sector from across the globe. With 1,100 attorneys spread across 29 offices around the world, we at Taylor Wissing help the world's most innovative people and businesses to crack complex legal problems, enabling new ideas and inspirations to thrive. Within our fintech practice that is comprised of attorneys qualified in a number of different jurisdictions, we advise new entrant fintech companies as well as established banks and financial service providers that are looking to leverage the use of innovative technologies in the financial services sector. I am Miroslav Juric. I'm an attorney in our financial services team based in our Frankfurt office. And after a rather longer break, we are back with a new two-episode series in which we will take a closer look at some key trends to watch in the fintech industry in 2024. In our first episode, we will take a closer look at some key fundraising, M&A, and broader market and industry developments, as well as drivers that will be of importance for the fintech industry in the EU and the UK. I am pleased to be joined today by Joseph Fuss, partner in our London office, who co-heads our international technology media communications practice and is one of the leading venture capital lawyers in Europe. Regularly supports innovative fintech businesses in corporate transactions. Joseph, hello and welcome.
Hey, Miroslav. Great to be here.
So, as we all know, last year was everything but an easy one for the fintech industry overall. Plummeting deal volumes and investors' pullback from more riskier assets classes into fixed income products promising safe returns have created quite a challenging environment for fintechs that are seeking their next funding round. And now, first, from the market and fundraising perspective, Joseph, I just wanted to hear your thoughts on a couple of points. First, what were actually some main challenges that fintechs have been facing last year, and how did the previous year end from your perspective?
Well, fair to say it's not been great, right? I'd say looking back at the end of last year, probably the prevailing sense within the fintech industry was one of pessimism, and the negative outlook, sort of looking back at it, it was probably based on a number of reasons. As you say, there were sort of a number of challenging macro level factors, significantly lower valuations for most fintechs, a lack of M&A, IPOs, higher interest rates, lower capital availability, and of course, a very challenging geopolitical situation. And I guess the combination of all of that then resulted in fintech VC deal value being down, I believe, around 40% year on year. I guess it's also worth remembering that fintech as a sector contributed some of the marquee VC deals in the heydays of 2021, 2022, with many fintechs raising money at very high valuations. So those same companies are now struggling to hit the same or similar multiples, and whilst at the same time becoming strapped for cash need to go raise more money at often significantly lower valuations. And I would say it's that disconnect in valuation expectations between investors, buyers on the one side, and companies on the other, that continues to contribute to much slower rates of VC deals and acquisitions. And another aspect, as you say, investor sentiment has shifted majorly. And given the current interest rate environment, you're absolutely seeing the focus move away from very sort of very balance sheet heavy business models, because they are of course very negatively impacted by the high cost of capital, unit economics are becoming much more challenging. I think another interesting one for me is also that and which doesn't help fintechs, is that the VCs themselves are really struggling. So if you look at the past, sort of the recent past and the current environment, generating alpha in this environment is really difficult, and continues to be difficult. And as a result, you have VCs being much more discerning about the checks that they ultimately do end up writing. And of course, apply far greater scrutiny when evaluating deals, which in turn leads to longer lead times, and the execution of deals becomes just much more difficult. And I would say in times where capital is expensive, and we talked about investors being more cautious, those companies or companies raising smaller rounds and who have stronger teams, financials, addressable markets, etc., are finding it much more easier to raise than those looking for large checks and those with very capital-intensive business models. Look, having said all of that, I'm an optimist, and I don't think it's all bleak. The VCs that I just described as struggling, certainly some of them, they're sitting on probably a record amount of dry powder, if they're not already deploying, they're gearing up to deploy. So I would say that that combined with some of the sort of really positive indicators that we've had from the Monzos, the Klarnas, the Starlings of this world, who've turned a corner, who've grown, become profitable, managed to attract more funding. I think those are really good indicators. And as a firm, we continue to be involved in lots of great work with companies who are either emerging or scaling in various areas. Embedded finance is a really interesting one. Payments, bank technology, CFO stack. Crypto, we're seeing much more crypto again. I would say it's generally I'm optimistic or cautiously optimistic, and it's also interesting if you look at the last financial crisis. Some of the great tech and fintech companies emerged from those challenging times and shortly thereafter. So I really hope that fintech has had a year of reckoning, I would say. Hopefully we will look back at this as a necessary short-term correction, but that it will otherwise be a positive growth story with the industry fundamentals remaining strong.
So after the first quarter of this year, what are some first impressions that you have now? So conscious of some capital that VCs didn't manage to deploy last year, and what is the general atmosphere in the industry right now? Can we expect to see any sunnier times on the horizon? I mean, conscious of possible interest rate cutting that we still didn't see, but that at least in the public markets, many are hoping for.
I would say, I'm generally cautiously optimistic. I think there are lots of green shoots if you want to see them, but the path is still bumpy. If I look at pure numbers, Q1 was still down, but the sector is certainly showing signs of life. So you know, I mentioned earlier the work that we're doing across the firm. So we're involved in tons of new fundraisings for, you know, companies at various maturity stages, whereby it's absolutely fair to say that the earlier stage investments still continue to dominate. And overall, I would say the trend continues with a focus on quality. However you define quality, and there's a really positive outlook though for disciplined, high quality fintechs, you know, with a realistic mindset, and who are ultimately focused on core projects.
Okay. That sounds at least sufficiently optimistic for me. What I also wanted to ask you, so as a result of these turbulences that we have experienced last year, do you notice in your practice, in your day-to-day practice, any changes when it comes to deal structures, deal mechanics, maybe even bargaining power allocation between VCs and companies seeking financing, as well as round valuations, of course, that are probably mostly impacted?
Yes is the answer. I would say, look, if you look back, valuations probably peaked in Q2 of 2021, and then probably dropped significantly. I understand they were probably down by about 80% by Q4 of 2023. So, As I mentioned earlier, one of the major challenges that we're seeing in getting deals done is the discrepancy in respect of valuations and expectations for valuations between investors, buyers on one hand, and companies on the other hand. It's probably not a big surprise that over the past 18 months or so, we saw a steady increase in the use of advanced subscription agreements, safes, very significant large convertible instruments that all operate to ultimately kick the valuation discussion down the road, often for longer time periods, and which are used as alternatives to price rounds. It's also really interesting to see that, you know, whilst capital continues to be scarce, those companies that are having traction in the market are generally receiving pretty much, you know, what I would call middle of the road type terms. You're also seeing a number of outlier companies that are, you know, they're absolutely killing it at the moment, that are receiving multiple term sheets and are able to negotiate a particularly effective terms for themselves. But that is not the full picture, of course. There are a whole myriad of companies out there who are running out of cash and who are struggling to raise. It's difficult for those companies. In some cases, you know, we're seeing, some very aggressive investor protection terms. Lots of down rounds, and including lots of cram downs. You see a lot of pay to play provisions, whereby basically you're requiring existing investors to participate in new funding rounds, otherwise risk having their previous preferred shares converted into ordinary shares. We've seen multiples on liquidation preferences, full ratchet anti-dilution protections, cumulative dividends, in some cases, mechanisms that ultimately hand a bigger stake in the company to the investor if management fails to meet certain targets. So it continues to be interesting out there.
So I also wanted to ask you. You briefly mentioned already what are some key subsectors of the fintech industry that where you see rising interest. Can you just elaborate a bit more on that? What are some hot areas of the fintech industries that at least investors appear to be most interested in?
Look, I would say, payments continues to be extremely popular, and that's probably across the whole across the whole space. So instant payments, but also cross-border payments. I'm very excited for some of the developments that we're seeing in mobile payments, and I expect those who will really continue to drive this category forward, as a default payment option. You've got your incumbents, the major credit card companies, the Apple Pays of this world, and I very much expect them to continue driving this market and to consolidate their position with investments and acquisition of smaller innovative payment companies into their own platforms and to thereby drive additional value. We're also seeing some really interesting deals getting done in embedded finance. Wealth tech is another one. And similar to what we're seeing in something like HR tech, we're seeing a fair bit of excitement for fintechs focusing on SMEs. So as these are becoming an even bigger part of the economy, it makes serving this sector more important than ever. And those businesses really grew up in the past decade or so. They require their financial services to be delivered digitally, and ultimately they create a great opportunity for fintechs and I guess tech forward banks to deliver solutions into this growing market. I just realized we've been speaking for a few minutes, and neither one of us has mentioned the buzzword of the last 18 months or so. So when we talk about excitement in fintech, we have to talk about AI. I think just like in other industries, we're seeing tons and tons and tons of AI applications and really mass exploration of the opportunities that AI presents, generative or otherwise. I would say at the moment, it's probably still, the vast majority is still really focused on operational use cases. You've got I think one of the stories that I read was the great efficiencies that Klarna was able to achieve in embedding it in its customer service. But ultimately there will need to be a move towards more enhanced product features and more customer facing tools. AI, of course, is extremely powerful, but speaking to clients, it is not easy for a business to deploy it for real world customer facing solutions and workflows. And of course, it also takes a lot of time, effort, capital to develop what I would call sort of true AI solutions. So my expectations will be that there will be a trend for larger enterprises to acquire AI solutions and to integrate those with their existing products and services and to then sell these alongside those. you know, I mentioned Klarna. You know, other success stories. You also saw coming out of Monzo, Starling, and whilst you've had those success stories, I think it's generally fair to say that investors are less keen on B2C models and neobanks and lending, and there's a real focus shift to B2B, you know, which generally speaking probably has more stable recurring revenues, larger addressable markets, and I guess less churn. And I mentioned crypto earlier, so that's another area that we're seeing a real uptick in activity. You know, I'm a great believer in crypto. I would say it's had a surge as of late with, you know, some rebounding investor sentiment there. Again, it's dropped back, I believe, as of late, recently, and remains volatile. But then, you know, with new regulation, hopefully, you know, we can reassure investors to pique their interest again, and hopefully we'll see some, you know, an increasing number of more, I would call sort of real world use cases. I think that would really help.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Definitely in this year, we're going to witness adoption of a lot of different technologies in the fintech space. And we are also cautiously optimistic also on our end. But now if we focus for a moment on interactions between incumbent financial institutions and fintechs, what do you think? May 2024 be another year in which incumbent financial institutions may look to boost their own M&A activity by eyeing some potential acquisitions of potential competitors and disruptors, or even looking for some kind of like cooperation arrangements like we witness and that we saw quite a lot in 2017-2018?
Look, I would say, given the current economic environment, you know, it's we've talked about the geopolitical tensions, uncertainty leading up to you know, we've got elections in the UK coming up. We've of course got have the US elections coming up. So my prediction is that whilst there will be an uptick, I would expect M&A generally to remain sluggish. You know, with the constrained VC market, I would also say that it will very likely remain a buyer's market for the foreseeable future. You know, with more companies and investors seeking liquidity, ultimately, you know, putting the power in the hands of potential acquirers. There is a really significant exit pipeline, you know, waiting for the right moment. And if it's not going to happen en masse this year, then, you know, my expectation is that will happen, you know, sort of over the next 2 years. And to your point, you know, the question as to who the acquirers are likely to be. You know, the incumbents are often, you know, a natural fit. There's also a really growing number of larger fintechs now, who I expect, you know, will want to make acquisitions to get stronger and, you know, protect their position. You know, really expand and build a suite of products, to cross sell to the existing customer base. And you know, we've already seen some fintechs, you know, that's started looking at software and e-commerce acquisitions. to embed their technology in. And ultimately, like we have seen in other markets, I'd expect to see, some verticalization. So smaller partners, consolidating, buying each other, in order to survive. Again, coming back to what we said at the outset, the long-term outlook here is positive. I think, the stat goes that around 80% of adults in the world remain underbanked or unbanked, and that's not just in emerging markets. We're talking about 54 million of them, in Europe. So I think we have reasons to be optimistic here.
Okay. And lastly, to conclude this part, I wanted to briefly discuss with you. So we all know there is quite a few very mature unicorns who are naturally expected to go public sometime. What is the general outlook for them right now and for this year? Will they still remain, so to say, shy, reluctant to go public this year, conscious of geopolitical tensions as well as upcoming elections, primarily in the States, or whether we may be witnessing some of them exploring some alternative options like buyouts or something that would secure the exit of their founders in some other way?
Look, I think the IPO market is an interesting one. We have Stripe, Klarna, Chime are all reportedly looking at coming to the market. I think Plaid, Plio have appointed CFOs again with a view to IPO. An interesting stat that I saw the other day was that I think since 2000 in the US and Europe, fintechs that started, over the last 24 years are now worth close to 2 trillion. So, and the vast majority of them, around 66%, are still private. So there's a real demand for liquidity. Whether whether the IPO route is the way forward, I guess remains to be seen. Inflation is coming down, as you said. Interest rates, not for now, but expected to come down. I guess that could further stimulate the IPO market. And, whilst, last year you had, Instacart, you had, British, chip manufacturer, chip designer, rather, I should say, Arm Holdings, listing, and probably fair to say that they failed to list, failed to launch a listing rush. The market has probably improved since. And, I was really encouraged by some of the really positive messages, coming out of the Reddit IPO. Share price there continues, to do okay. That will hopefully continue to send messages into the market, or positive messages into the market. And to your point, whether we will need to look at other avenues for liquidity. I don't expect an absolute frenzy of buyout and M&A activity, as I said earlier, and I expect that to be sluggish. But I absolutely do see that some of the incumbents will take a very close look at the opportunities available at the moment, and will make the relevant moves. Ultimately, though, given the current macro environment and elections looming in, what is it, around 80 markets, impacting sort of half of the world's population, including most notably the US. I guess the key to all of this will be timing.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you very much, Joseph, for a lot of very interesting observations and information that you shared with us today. And this brings us to the end of our today's episode. I would like to thank you for joining me today, Joseph. It was really great speaking to you about these very interesting topics. In our second episode, we will take a closer look at some key regulatory developments of importance for the fintech industry in the EU, during which I will be discussing these with Dr. Verena Ritta-Doring, partner and head of our financial services regulatory practice. Thank you all for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, feel free to subscribe to our channel to stay up to date with our forthcoming episodes that will continue to explore latest legal and regulatory developments, trends, and hot topics in the fintech sector from across the globe.